All right, kicking off hour number two, we'll get to the 5 at 5 in a moment. I spent much of the break trying to come up with sort of a local scenario where we would be that excited about something not happening.
Well, maybe it's Florida and Tennessee both getting their coaches fired.
Here's the spin I have on it. The college football playoff began in 2014. Since then, Alabama has qualified for every one of them. But now, Alabama is not in the college football playoff. I guess that would be the same as Italy not qualifying for the World Cup.
I'm kind of like you, though. I think Bama's pretty much a lock now. Assuming they beat Mercer.
I think they're close to it. Here's where I think the spin is, where Bama gets in over once beaten Oklahoma. Two problems Oklahoma has. One is they'll use against Oklahoma. Hey, Ohio State, and they gave up 55 points at Iowa. And then the other thing is Iowa State's limping to the finish line now. They've lost now back-to-back games to West Virginia and Oklahoma State. So that being their only loss, it's starting to downgrade that. So they're going to downgrade the win over Ohio State. Iowa State is starting to leak a little bit of oil. And one loss, Alabama, if their only loss is at Auburn, Alabama is in the playoff.
Well, right, for my Bulldog Illustrated top 25, I've got Georgia at number 4. Because I think even though it was a blowout loss, of the one-loss teams, the best team that has beaten the one-loss teams is Auburn, without a doubt. Auburn's better than Iowa State. Auburn is better than Syracuse.
Yes.
So that's why I've got Georgia at 4.
Good call. Yeah.
I go Alabama, Miami, Wisconsin, Georgia.
Well, tomorrow it's going to be interesting to see. Now, you still have Miami and Wisconsin unbeaten. What were they ranked last week, 7 and 8?
I think Miami's going to be number 2. They are in the coaches' poll in the AP poll today.
Okay. They should be in the top 4.
Absolutely.
And
they should be number 2.
I don't know. I don't know where Wisconsin's going to end up. I think my top 4 would be Alabama now ascends to number 1. I'd put Miami in at number 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have Oklahoma 3rd and Georgia 4. And I guess I'd have Wisconsin 5. Is that right?
Then you got Clemson and then
– oh, wait. I forgot about Clemson. Hang on. What am I doing? I'm putting Clemson 4, not Oklahoma.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got Clemson, Oklahoma.
Because Clemson beat Auburn. I might have Auburn 5. I'd have Clemson 3, Georgia 4, and then
– God, that – and here's the thing. You know what screwed everything up? LSU's lost to Troy.
Well, yeah, it's crazy that Auburn lost to LSU, and that's a bad loss.
I know, but now LSU, they're hitting their stride. Now they've got a good team, but
– they lost to Troy.
I know. I mean, had they won that game, their two losses would be to Mississippi State and Auburn.
And Bama.
I'm sorry. There's no shame in that, obviously.
No, but they lost at home to Troy.
You can't get past that.
And I'm telling you, that's going to be – that's a side effect of Ed Orgeron as head coach.
Yeah. It's crazy to me, too, that when you think about what's happening up in Knoxville, that it's like LSU's playing Tennessee this week. And those two hadn't played each other a ton. But when they have, there have been some classic games. These are two of the storied programs in SEC and college football history, and it's 7-3 against 4-6. You just
– CBS is here this weekend instead of up there. And that could be that's Brady Hoke against Ed Orgeron.
By the way, was it this past summer or the summer before when you called that Butch Jones had hired his interim replacement, that Brady Hoke would be the next head coach of
Tennessee? It was back in the spring. That was my
– So was this his first or second year with Tennessee, Brady Hoke?
I don't know, but it was my bold –
No, it was a great call.
This was his first year there because he was at Oregon last year wrecking that defense.
Okay. I couldn't remember if this was his first
or second year. That was my bold prediction.
It was a great call.
Yeah. But I actually had Butch getting fired after our game, which he should have been, but they kept him until last weekend. And then Brady Hoke would have taken over from there. But here we are. Brady Hoke, interim. Brady Hoke and Ed Orgeron are going to coach a game against each other in the SEC.
Not just Tennessee and LSU. This isn't Ole Miss and Vandy. No
correct.
Offense. This is
correct.
Tennessee and LSU.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why CBS needs to rethink that the biggest game from the biggest conference. Like, you do realize that Ed Orgeron and Brady Hoke will be coaching against each other in this juggernaut conference.
I've got a feeling with some of the hires that have been made the last few years at some schools, obviously Georgia hit a grand slam with a favorite son coming home, the unbelievable job Kirby Smart's doing. But you look at some of the major power schools and who they've hired, I just have a feeling at least a couple of these schools are going to get it right this time. And, of course, the one that everybody keeps the biggest eye on is Florida, because they could turn it quickly with all the talent in that state.
Yeah, like next year.
Yes.
Yeah.
They could be good next year and great the year after that.
Yeah. Which brings us to today's 5 at 5, brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. Jeff, what happened? How bad is your confidence shaken? Will Georgia ever win another game?
I think we got a chance to win another game at some point. And what happened, first and foremost, Auburn deserved to win. They outplayed Georgia. Georgia made too many mistakes. The biggest worry was the way Auburn dominated the line of scrimmage. They kicked Georgia's butt on the line of scrimmage. Penalties, which had been a problem, showed up again. And things that Georgia had done well all season, Georgia didn't do well. The special teams have been great. It all fell apart this past weekend. And in the end, with a margin for error, Chris, you know, Georgia had those chances. The missed long ball, the silly penalty on the punt that led to a touchdown, the missed field goal at the end of the half. Georgia could have been winning at halftime, could have been winning by a touchdown or so at halftime. And then the fumbled punt to start the second half. Just too many self-inflicted wounds when the other guy was having a great day and you're having a bad day. And then give Auburn credit. When it snowballed, that stadium was rocking. They turned it on and did a great job putting Georgia away.
Did Saturday expose something in Georgia that Kentucky this weekend could potentially exploit?
Well, I think on the line of scrimmage, the key is going to be, can that offensive line get their confidence back? But you have to remember, too, that place is going nuts. You got two freshmen on the right side. You can't hear. There's a true freshman quarterback. It was one of those perfect storm type things. Now, it was loud up in Knoxville, but Georgia got off to such a good start, they kind of took the crowd out of the game. Georgia had half the crowd at Notre Dame. Georgia had half the crowd at Vanderbilt. Georgia had over half the crowd at Florida. So am I leaving one out there, road games there?
That's all of them, yeah.
So this was the first time, and even at Tech, and listen, Tech might win, but that crowd's going to be 40 to 50% Georgia over there. So this was the first time that it was just a huge factor. And I think everything just hit at once. So, again, hopefully Georgia will just put this in the rearview mirror. And if the Dogs go out and beat Kentucky on Saturday, everything is right back on track. All of a sudden, Chris, we're 10-1 heading to play Tech.
Yeah, I still view Georgia as a team that is capable of beating anybody, but also not capable of just losing to anybody, which I think is another, you know, important point to make about teams that are really good. And I don't walk away after what I saw Georgia do against Auburn Saturday and suddenly think that the Dogs are vulnerable at home this weekend against Kentucky. And I think that's, you know, one thing we all need to keep in perspective and keep in mind. We can worry about the matchup in the SEC championship game against either Auburn or Alabama when that gets there. But I still think Georgia is going to take care of business the next two games. I mean, my supreme confidence against Tech stems from, once again, it just goes back to guys like Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and the idea of them returning for the season to suddenly have it completely ruined by losing to Georgia Tech again. That's something I can't imagine right now. And, you know, while Michelle and Chubb were certainly slowed Saturday, that was because Auburn just had a tremendous advantage on the line of scrimmage, and Tech's defensive front is not anywhere near as imposing as Auburn's was. By the way, Derek Brown was well worth the money that Auburn spent on him.
He's a great player.
He was just whipping Solomon Kinley all day.
Yeah, he is a – the guy was a five-star.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know we wanted him, and we know why we didn't get him.
Darius Slayton, too.
Yeah.
But Brown was
– Brown was the one guy, like, I would – that's the one guy they have that I feel – and I guess Slayton had, you know, came – I guess he had been committed here, right? So – but Derrick Brown was the one guy on that team that I felt like, well, you know, we could have had him, but well,
and that was
we didn't.
One too, kind of.
I would like
up,
to have had.
Yeah, like a week before signing day, because Kirby was here. It was so hot, everything's going great, and it's like, yeah, I think we're going to get this guy too. Then it's one of those deals. The closer you got to signing day, and that's when the dead period is, and then you just started kind of getting more and more into. Well, it's not looking so good. It took me back to.
I told you, that photo I saw of him at Pat Dye's cabin.
Took me back to 1986, Chris, National Signing Day. This was way before the internet, and this is the day after signing day. I just you didn't know who would sign where. You had to wait on the paper. So I got up at like 6:30, ran out to get the paper. It wasn't there. I was like, oh, I don't know. And my mom was like, well, listen, you got to get ready for school. Just go ahead and jump in the shower. I'll go check. I was like, okay. So I'm sitting there in the shower, scrubbing up, and she just yells through the bathroom door, John Johnson went to Clemson, this great defensive lineman from LaGrange. And I just, oh, but he had been committed to us. What happened during the dead period? It was the same thing with Derrick Brown 30 years later, except he went to Auburn.
Yeah. Can I do a brief aside, too? And I know I don't believe Pat Dye should ever be on the Georgia Tailgate Show. He is a hostile foreign power. He is an enemy of the state. And it's like he's like Vladimir Putin. Make no mistake, that is a hostile enemy. And that is what Pat Dye is. He spent 4 years of his life here. He has spent way many, many, many more years of his life at Auburn. And I would just like to say I did not enjoy hearing him on the Tailgate Show Saturday.
The man enough. He is an Auburn man 100% who, without a doubt, you might could argue Steve Spurrier, but for a lot of those years, Georgia wasn't even in the same ballpark as Florida. Pat Dye has handed Georgia as much angst and heartache as any coach and any person since Bobby Dye in the infamous 8-game drought against Tech in the 1950s. He, for me, if I had to name a number one enemy of the state of Georgia football in my lifetime, thank goodness I wasn't alive in the 50s. I wouldn't have been able to handle the 8 in a row. It is Pat Dye. He is my number one enemy of the Georgia state.
Yeah, and I understand he played here, he went here, but that was 4 short years of his very long life.
And though I do appreciate the blocked PAT against the enemy and the 7-6 win in 1960.
Which you weren't alive then, though.
Wallace Butt's last game. It's an All-American for the 59 SEC championship.
You were also not alive then.
What he did at Auburn with so many players from Georgia.
When you were living.
Received by nefarious means, costing us SEC championships in 83, 87, and 88.
Make no mistake, the team that he wanted to win won Saturday.
No question. No question, 100%.
Yeah.
He is, I don't care who you are, you might disagree with me, who's number one, who's number two. If you made a bizarro Mount Rushmore of Georgia enemies, he is right there.
Yeah,
he
I mean,
is
I just,
on it.
I got to say, nix the Pat Dye interview on the Tailgate Show. I don't think, I mean, who wants to hear from him? He's an enemy of Georgia's. He is.
Mount Rushmore of Georgia villains.
All right, moving on now in the 5-5. Jeff, the Miami Hurricanes, it's all about the U. Let me ask you something, Jeff. If Miami wins the national championship with Mark Richt as head coach, is that the most untoppable, only at Georgia moment ever? Is that Jack Nicklaus's major streak, DiMaggio's hitting streak? That's like there's nothing that would ever top that, correct?
Especially when you consider the job that Kirby is doing here, the rocket fuel this Georgia program is on right now.
In the middle of one of Georgia's all-time dream seasons.
No question. Again, for me, it's my most enjoyable Georgia football season since 1982. And it's also proof positive what we said. It's one of the healthiest divorces ever. Clearly, he's gotten rejuvenated.
Yeah.
Because the recruiting here the last couple of years, well, when Pruitt came in, that beefed up the defense. But a lot of the things that were going on within the program, listen, I get it. You get tired. You get beaten down. You get worn down. And, again, Georgia's in a much better place. Mark Richt is in a much better place. And I love the man. He's a great man. But that being said, in the midst of one of Georgia's great seasons –
It's weird to be watching what they're doing and realizing
bizarre.
that, like, yeah, I mean, they're, because believe me, they're as much a contender to win the national championship as anybody can.
I agree. And honestly,
this is a wide open year, and Miami can get there as easily as any of these other teams can.
When Coach Rick, he was just so magnanimous at his departure press conference. You know, my thinking was he's going to at least take a year or two off. We know what a passion he has for the missionary and the way he got involved with the Paul Oliver project. My thinking was, okay, Kirby's coming in here. He loves Coach Rick. So he worked for him. I think Mark's going to at least take a year or two. And I thought he'd be a great ambassador for the university. You know, get behind. I think the Paul Oliver project's something that could spider web to other schools. So you get your other alumni involved, get them together to make sure former players who are going through a tough time, make sure you've got resources and guys to reach out to. I was stunned not only when he got back into coaching, but think about Miami, Jimmy Johnson, Dennis Erickson, Howard Schnellenberger. Really, he's going back on to okay.
Ed Reed, Michael Irvin,
Ray Lewis,
Warren Sapp. Although Ray Lewis really doesn't seem to be around anymore down there.
No,
but
I'm
the other guys
about the great
are.
Players.
Yeah, yeah. But the guys that still hang out down there.
Yeah.
Like Ed Reed was
Michael
on the sideline looking cool with that big, like, beard. It's got a little touch of gray in it and everything. And
it's surreal.
It really is. And, I mean, I don't have any animosity toward Mark Richt. He was a heck of a coach for Georgia for a long time, and I like him too. But at the same time, I'm not sure I want to
see. No, I do not. I do not want to see Miami win the national title with Mark Richt. Now, if we win two or three with Kirby here at Georgia, and then if they got in the playoff, if we missed it one year, as long as we beat Tech, oh, okay, you might root for them. But no. Hell no. I don't want to see Miami and Mark Richt win a national championship before Georgia.
And especially when Georgia could just as easily win it this year, too.
No question.
But, yeah, there they are, though. After what they've done the last 2 weeks, they are definitely in play. Because they will be in the top four tomorrow. I'd put them number two right now.
They should be number two.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so many similarities, too. Just these near misses against inferior teams. But then, you know, just about every year, we'd have that magic game or two when it all – like that win over LSU in 2004. And
yeah,
they've had them back-to-back weeks.
Except in this case, he's dodged the actual loss.
He has.
They've had the moments where they – like the North Carolina game a couple weeks ago.
Florida State had them.
Yeah.
Tech had them.
Like, you know, they're like favored by 19 this week.
They ain't losing to Virginia.
They're not going to lose to Virginia.
They won't cover.
Now, again, if the weather is messy the day after Thanksgiving at Pittsburgh, that could be interesting for them.
That's a Friday game?
That's a Friday game.
Okay.
The day after Thanksgiving, they go to Pitt.
Okay.
Now – we check the weather forecast and see how that's going to look. That could be a little dodgy for them. But then I just feel like the ACC title game is going to end up setting up like these last 2 weeks where everyone's picking on them. They're not going to beat Clemson, though. They're not going to be able to beat Clemson, though. And then they're going to beat Clemson.
It's unbelievable what's happened this season.
I've sat here all year as Georgia's having this great year and just wondered, okay, but when is the only at Georgia moment coming? And I'm telling you, that would be it. And I'm with you. I'm with you. I'll say it too. Like I have nothing against him, but I don't want to see him show up there in his second year and they win the national title, especially coinciding with Georgia being as capable of anybody as doing it too.
And the crazy thing is, you know, there's no way to prove this. I'm just telling you, Georgia would not be near this good if Kirby wasn't here right now. Mark has been completely rejuvenated down there. Good for him. I'm happy for him that he's happy and that he's doing well.
Yeah, I think he's got a better relationship with his administration than he had here in the last couple of years.
But no question, Georgia is in a much better place. I mean, with what Kirby's doing with the recruiting. And, you know, I think another thing to keep in mind, and I know Thomas and Fromm are playing such prominent roles. If you would have told me too, Chris, that Georgia, and this might be just, I don't mean to hog things here and go off topic. If you'd have told me that Georgia was 9-1, I would have guessed there'd be 4, 5, or 6 true freshmen really starring. The fact that it's been 2. So that means all these hot shots that came in this year, you know, they're helping on special teams and, you know, they're helping as backups and playing good. But you've really only got, I'm correct, unless I'm missing somebody, but Fromm and Thomas – are the only
Swift. I mean,
yeah, the Swift playing. He's not starting. You're right. Yeah. Swift is. Yes.
He's played a pretty.
You're
big
exactly
role.
Right. Swift is. But I was like, just but thinking
the guys like LeCount and Gibbs that I was expecting.
McBride, Walter Grant. They're playing Monty. Right. They're playing. They're doing great.
Yeah.
They're those heir apparents. But it's almost one. And you're spot on with Swift. I was just thinking starters. But I'd say, like, boy, all these guys must be coming and being dynamos. So it's like, all right, we got those guys waiting in the wings. We're going to be really good. We got Zamir White and Justin Fields coming in. We might sign another great. We're going to be really, really – we got all these guys coming. We're getting the taste of it this year. I mean, this program is on such rocket fuel. You got to keep your eye down there. I mean, it's surreal what's happening, that Miami is sitting there having this kind of year.
Very, a very, very good team.
Georgia's in a much better place.
With
Mark
an excellent
Richt is
defense.
In a better place.
Yeah. They've got an excellent defense, and what Mark Richt has always been able to do here, it's, you know, outside of what, maybe like 2 years, Georgia always had good quarterback play. He's got him a good quarterback in Malik Rozier,
Mobile
even though
one.
They lost Brad Kaya.
Yep.
And, you know, he's calling the plays again. That's another part of him. I've been kind of getting re-energized, too. Maybe he should have done that instead of hiring Brian Schottenheimer.
That was a bad move.
But, it's hard to process the idea of Miami winning the title, but they absolutely could as much as anybody can, including Georgia. And, I mean, that's the other wrinkle, too. And somehow, if, like, neither one of them make the playoff, they'll probably end up playing in a bowl game, won't
could
they?
Could happen, yeah.
Yeah. All right, that's the 5 at 5 brought to you by Duplicating Systems. More than a system, a solution. It's never not interesting around here. That's for sure.
Pat Dye and Mark Richt.
Yeah.
That was an all-timer five at five, by the way.
Trust me, in like 10 years, you want to interview Mark Richt on the Tailgate
Show?
Have at it.
I mean,
he will never be an enemy of the state.
No, he's one of the great coaches in Georgia and SEC history.
Yes. He will never against Georgia. Pat Dye spent basically his all but 4 years of his life doing that, right? I don't know, whatever he did after he played. I guess he went and played in Canada.
Yeah, his coaching career. When he landed at Auburn, he is 100% Auburn.
Yeah, he is War Eagle through and through.
100%.
That just set a bad tone for the day, I thought.
I agree.
All right, we'll come back. Got our hot and cold players of the week coming up, and I promise, since instead of just making it easy, I don't put any Georgia players on the hot list. I ain't putting any on the cold list either. I'm all just
getting ready for Kentucky.
Other games.